call the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources to order. It's Wednesday, April 27th. And just so the committee knows, we're not going to do a public hearing on House Bill 2393. Representative Nelson is unable to attend and is out ill. So we're going to go to a public hearing on House Bill 2513. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2513. And Mark or Pat?
Pat.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, whatever.
I would be glad to, regardless of who I am.
Oh, you're
House Bill 2513 requires that shipments of nursery stock be accompanied by a shipping permit number. We have not, at this time, received official paperwork from the Legislative Fiscal Office as to whether the bill will have a fiscal impact, but some of the witnesses may speak to the possibility of that. It has no subsequent referral, and this is the first time we've heard of it.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I'll call Scott Ashton of the Oregon Agricultural Alliance and Rod Park. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
For the record, Scott Ashton with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance, and joining me today is Rod Park, Park's Nursery Company in near Gresham. I want to thank the Chair very, very much for having the foresight and the concern for the problem that this bill addresses. And thank you very much, Madam Chair, for seeing fit to have this bill drafted. We ask for the introduction of this measure simply to draw the attention of the committee to a growing problem in the state of Oregon, and that's the problem of the theft of nursery stock. The problem seems to be particularly intense in the areas of the urban rural interface, for example, near urban growth boundaries, in rural lands, which are just outside of urban growth boundaries, but they're near urban growth boundaries, they're near the city limits. The problem is particularly intense in Washington County, in Clackamas County, and to some degree in Multnomah County, because the urban areas encroach upon rural areas in those locales. Although we have reports of theft of nursery stock in Marion County, in literally all throughout the Willamette Valley. Now, I'm talking about the kind of theft that occurs at 2 or 3 in the morning with somebody that realizes that nursery stock has a tremendous amount of value. For example, some of the trees that our growers produce are worth $95 a tree, $100 a tree, and so forth. And if they have 5 or 6 of these trees in the back of their pickup truck and they're driving down a rural road at 3 o'clock in the morning, the purpose of our bill is just to give the sheriff a tiny little tool, not a new penalty, not a new law enforcement technique, but a little tool to identify whether or not these people have stolen that nursery stock. And this is how the bill is intended to work. The sheriff stops somebody for some legitimate reason. They have a tail light out or headlamp out at 3 in the morning. He happens to notice that there's 5 or 6 $100 trees in the back of the pickup truck, and so he asks the driver if they have their nursery shipping permit number with them. This is a new requirement, and this is a requirement which would be established by House Bill 2513. It's just a little tag with the shipping permit number on it. And the shipping permit number, as specified in the bill, is the same as the nursery license number. So this is something that nurseries can do now voluntarily, but our bill makes it mandatory. If the sheriff finds that a shipment of nursery stock, 5 trees in back of a pickup truck at 3 o'clock in the morning, they don't have their shipping permit number, the sheriff then could ask, what nursery are these trees from? And the people driving the truck say, they're from, such nursery. Well, fine, go on your way. And the next morning, the sheriff can call the nursery and see if they had a shipment at 3 o'clock in the morning of nursery stock out on out on the country road. It's just that simple. Madam Chair, you know, you look at the bill here, and it's obvious that this is not, you know, a complicated, abstract, large, big think piece of proposed legislation. This is a starting point. And the purpose of our introducing the bill is to, first and foremost, give the bill to the committee. You know, once the bill is introduced, it becomes your property. And it's your bill now. And we're asking you to give us some help. We're asking this committee to help provide the nursery industry with a tool to get a handle on this debt. Any proposals that this committee has for changing the bill, we will welcome them with open arms. It's just a starting point. If the committee wishes to appoint a work group to iron out any provisions of this bill or introduce amendments to the bill to change it radically, we'll be in support of that. We just want you to have something to help address this issue. And that's my pitch. It's a simple one. And we leave it in your hands. Rod Park will tell you about some very real problems that he has perceived with regard to theft of nursery stock, and he'll talk about some of the conversations he's had with Bernie Gusto and various other sheriffs in the Tri-County area. Thank you, Mr.
Green. Thank you.
Okay. Chair Smith, committee, good to see you again. And for the record, my name is Rod Park. I currently own and operate Parks Nursery in Gresham, Oregon. I still am a past president of the Nursery Association and still a past chair of the Board of Agriculture. Thank you for this opportunity to testify again today on another issue regarding the nursery industry. As you know, the farm gate value of the nursery industry is over $750 million and continuing to climb. That with its notoriety, however, comes an additional problem that we have been trying to figure out how to address, and that's called plant rustling. And that's kind of the best way I can describe it. Is plant theft has become a problem without any easy solutions. Due to the nature of the business, our manufacturing facilities have no walls, no doors to lock, and no effective ability to post guards for our products. We're out in the rural areas primarily, near urban areas, but very accessible. Branding our product, by the way, seems a little extreme too, so that we haven't considered that. You know, worse yet is the old adage that possession is nine-tenths of the law. And it really is true in nursery products. Once the plant leaves our possession, we do not have a method to identify that plant again if ownership is disputed. Our product doesn't have serial numbers. It doesn't have identifying electronic chips in it or any type of distinguishing marks that are not easily removed, such as plastic tags, etc. Let me give you a couple of personal stories that maybe help illustrate some of the problems and why the House Bill 2513 is a modest step, as Scott said, towards a solution. My first experience with this problem was when I was a lot younger, and upon returning late one night to the nursery after out helping the hops industry, I found a van parked out in front of the nursery and next to the side of the road, next to some an area where we stored plants for shipments. And I took down the license number as it drove off and went up and checked the area, and found plants that had been drugged to the fence and other nursery supplies that had been put in the van. Called the sheriff. The sheriff went and happened to run the license number, went and came out, and given it was 2:00 in the morning, they were, I guess, not that busy, and we went out and happened to find the van where it happened to be, just driving in that near the residence. Pulled it over and checked it out, and lo and behold, there's plants in the back and nursery products. The trouble is, to make a long story short, is when we went to court, we could not prove they were our plants. We could not prove they were our nursery products. We were stuck, and the court and the case was dismissed. Just last year, from one of the fields across from my home, someone took 10 plants. It's not very many. However, they're about 10 years old, and each one at the wholesale price level where it's worth $300 a piece. These are topiary plants that are sculptured. It probably took the person or persons a very short period of time to harvest them. But the issue is, even if I had gotten up in the middle of the night and stumbled out and found them and didn't manage to get a shovel in the back of the head, there was no way that I could prove that these were my plants once they were off the property. So you don't have a control method. Last story is about a fellow, this is anecdotal, it's about a fellow nurseryman in the Gresham area who saw some of his plants being loaded into the back of a truck. Follow the truck down using cell phones. Finally got the truck stopped with the sheriff down around Eugene. Well, the individual then, instead of the individual who stopped him, instead of them being able to say, these are my plants, they were almost arrested by the sheriff for having pulled this truck over, even though the person in the truck could not say where he got the material from or didn't have any shipping type of permit or a bill of lading or any type of identification, because there's no requirement. So therefore, the individual is out the plants, even though these were plant patented specialty plants that only three growers grew them because they held the patent on the plant, they still could not prove the theft. I should say this is not going to stop plant theft by itself. It is just a tool to start us in a direction of being able to start to trace some of this down as when you see something suspicious happening, having to build that record. This is the same tool that is being used currently under state law for the Christmas tree folks for the same reasons, which is the difficulty of tracing the material. So we're not asking for anything different that doesn't already exist. And I believe, and this is, I'm not sure on this, it's the same type of tool that is required for the timber industry for the same type of reasons. So it is a small step in that direction. I certainly appreciate your help. As Mr. Ashcombe said, what tweaks that we could do to this, that would be great. If you would like to make it more enforceable, I would certainly love that too. But at this time, we know that there are fiscal reasons to try to keep things modest, but it's a small tool. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the panel? Representative Hatt?
Thank you. I have always wondered about this as a problem in Washington County. I often buy dogwoods, and it's not unusual for these plants to cost $80, $90, $100. And when I drive by the countryside and see 60 or 70 of them right up someone's nursery, I always wondered if this was a problem. And I think it's a good idea to start this, and I think we should look at doing even more with this. And I don't. What is it that the Christmas tree industry does that we could apply similar language to?
Well, from what my understanding, this is just what they have is this particular piece. This is lifted out of state statute and just extended to the nursery industry. So I certainly appreciate the concern, Representative Haas, because it is with the industry moving more and more towards containerization and ease of movement, the ability, shall we say, to procure is becoming much easier in some cases. And there's the other part of this, too, that I find very disruptive, is that in some cases, people really don't understand what they're taking. And so they'll take large lace-leaf maple that are in full leaf, that are ready for shipment, and rip them out of the packing material out of the balls, and we know that the survivability is very, very low. So not only have they taken it, but they've also destroyed the plant material. So even if you do recover, your odds of getting, the insurance company doesn't pay off on it and so forth. So thank you for the concern.
Thank you. My question was, why was the nursery industry not included in when they did the Christmas tree?
You've got a longer history since 86 than I do.
Yes, Madam Chair, I really don't want to answer that.
Oh, okay. I withdraw the question.
I'll answer it, but I might be a little circumspect. At the time, the nursery industry was represented by Ted Hughes and myself as lobbyists, and our strategy back in those days, it was a long time ago, was basically to stay away from any kind of regulation whatsoever. So it was
Well, it is a different day, obviously.
Madam Chair, may I address one question?
Sure.
Chuck Craig is here for Oregon Department of Agriculture, and he's going to talk about some difficulties and lack of clarity in this particular draft of the bill.
Okay.
He suggested just a few moments ago to me, and this is just a suggestion, that perhaps requiring a bill of lading instead of a shipping permit number might be better from the standpoint of the department. So I would ask that when Chuck comes up, perhaps you explore that possibility in that way. And then secondly, Mark Simmons is here from the Oregon Association of Nurseries, and I think he's brought a collection of some findings, some materials, some research done by OAN about the extent of the problem and how it actually takes place. So I hope that that could be entered into the record when they come up.
Certainly will.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Berglund had a question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Does this go over beyond the nurseries to retail as well? I mean, I wonder at times when I look at these places like Fred Meyer and others that have a lot of the stock right out there in front of them. They wrap a chain around it, but it's easy to get. I'm sure they have the same kind of problem with regard to theft. Their product.
We were thinking primarily at the wholesale level, just because of the generally out of Fred Meyer's and so forth, they have fencing and some other security and so forth. Whereas, you know, when I'm on, for example, my operation currently is at 40 acres. Well, a quarter mile down two main highways makes it pretty difficult, and you would think that that would be a deterrent. But believe it or not, people at 8:30 at night decide it's the time to shop. So,
I recognize that it's a problem. I'm just thinking, how would a person? I guess I just take the license number. If you had a person that was getting doing a new project at their house, and they'd gone down and they bought all this stuff and it was in their truck, and they left it there for a couple of days as they went back and forth doing things, they also might be out for something. I guess they'd have their sales receipt, but would it track it back all the way to the nursery that sold it to the admirer thing? I guess is what I'm trying to figure out.
Not as envisioned.
Let's have a discussion.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you very much for the questions. Dan Hilburn and Chuck Craig, Oregon Department of Ag. Thank you and welcome. As you can see, we're intrigued by this issue.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Smith and members, for the opportunity to speak to the bill. For the record, my name is Chuck Craig. I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Agriculture, and with me is Dan Hilburn, the Administrator of our Plant Division. Madam Chair and members, the issue of theft of nursery stock is a significant issue and a very substantial economic problem in some areas for the nursery industry, and the department is genuinely interested in some mechanisms being brought to bear that would reduce this economic loss on our nursery producers. It is a identifying individual plants is an extremely vexing problem. I'm reminded of an incident that took place about 18 months ago when the mad cow scare was going on. The National Plant Board decided that it was time to take up the issue of how do you identify a plant for traceability. And the best that they could come up with after the finest minds in the country deliberating on this was find a cow that's enrolled in an identification system and attach the plant to the cow. So, again, this is a serious problem, and we're interested in helping find some kind of solutions that would work. We do have some issues of clarity and practicality about the bill that's before you that we'd like to bring up and suggest then that we'd be available to help in any way possible to develop something. And also, we believe that the fiscal connected with the existing bill would be negligible. It's minuscule. So, So, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Dan Hilburn to actually relate some of the details to you of our review of the bill.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Dan Hilburn. I'm administrator of the Plant Division for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And I would issue Chuck's comments that traceability of plants is something that is an important issue right now, not just for theft, but also for diseases in other regions. So it's an issue that definitely needs attention. Some of the questions we have are outlined on the testimony that you have before you. One of the first one is kind of a procedural issue where we have a nursery advisory committee that's created in statute, which is the purpose is to advise and counsel the department on the administration of the nursery program. That committee has never been consulted on these changes, and so we'd like to encourage that they get involved in that. They represent the entire industry, and we rely on them heavily for advice and counsel. The second concern has to do with enforcement. The way that nursery program exists currently is we have 13 inspectors in the field, and they are extremely busy running around looking at shipments of nursery stock for export and certifying that they are healthy. And those people are really not available to be enforcing this kind of program. So don't delude yourself that the nursery program would be an enforcement arm here. That's going to have to be somebody else. Also, it's not clear under what law or what kinds of penalties theft of nursery stock or transportation without a permit would be covered. Right now, the penalties for transportation of nursery stock speak to having a license, but I think it needs to be clarified what theft of nursery stock would be prosecuted under, what laws would apply there. Is that under the nursery law, or is that some kind of property theft law? So that's another thing that probably needs to be clarified. Number three in our testimony, there's some terms that are used in the proposed bill that probably need definition. For instance, shipments of nursery stock between operations in the same grower, would those need to be accompanied by a shipping permit? In other words, if you're transporting your own stock from your own growing grounds to your own retail outlet or between growing grounds. Many nurseries in this state have multiple growing grounds, and so we need to think about that. Would you need a shipping permit to move your own stock between your own business locations? And finally, we need to think about landscapers, because landscapers are not required to have nursery licenses unless they store the nursery stock for a relatively long period of time. And they do transport nursery stock around in their trucks relatively frequently. So those folks would not have shipping permits available to them with the current system. Let me just show you what a shipping permit looks like. They come in small tablets like this. It's a sticker. It has a blank on there for the nursery to enter their license number and a statement which says that this is to certify that the nursery doing business under the above permit number has been regularly inspected and to the best of our knowledge is free from dangerous pests and diseases. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about shipping permits. Right now we issue them to licensed nurseries that request them. And mostly they're used for interstate shipments because other states require them. We require them for nursery stock coming into Oregon. Most other states have similar requirements. So it's an indication that this nursery stock is coming from a nursery that is licensed and has been inspected, and that's how they're used currently.
Great. So you don't see this bill as a solution looking for a problem. You see it as there's just some concerns raised with how it's written.
That's my concern. I think if the bill were to pass, I don't think it's going to create big problems for us. We could easily supply the permits to more people. There are some issues there with enforcement and landscapers and penalties and things that I think we probably ought to think about before we do this.
point. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the ORS 571.991, it allows for fines up to $5,000 if you violate this section, so it does seem like we've got that language in there already.
I mean, Chair Smith.
I can appreciate the question on whether or not... Excuse me. Whether or not it's the Department of Ag doing the enforcement, or, as the previous speakers had addressed, if it's the sheriff that's making the stop. But it sounds to me like the penalties are there already.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I think the question that we have is the intent to prosecute this property theft crime or a nursery licensing law crime? There are criminal penalties in the statutes, as you've noted, for violation of the nursery licensing laws, and transporting nursery stock without a license could be an offense that would have that $5,000 penalty associated with it. But you could also, if someone had stolen the stock, obviously they could be prosecuted for theft. So it's not clear to us from the bill what the intent would be in terms of which crime someone would be prosecuted for. And that would have to do with who would be enforcing it and investigating it, and what the expectations would be as to how it would actually work.
Okay. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a lot of the questions that were buzzing around in my head have been asked. The Christmas tree industry, though, that already has this, do you have any report back on how this is working? Are these the same issues that you were raised when that one came into effect? Have there been any problems?
Madam Chair, Representative Beyer, that predates me, so I don't have any personal experience with that. The Christmas tree shipping is a much more concentrated season, and much, even though it's a big industry in this state, compared to the nursery industry, it's not very big. So we don't have any problems. Well, we haven't had any problems with using shipping permits for Christmas trees that I know of, so I would say that it's working.
Can I ask you a question, sort of? Thank you very much.
Okay.
We have Mark Simmons from the Oregon Association of Nurseries here. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mark Simmons. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries, and our ABLE staff is handing out to you a copy of a presentation that was done after a nursery theft task force work was completed within the association. The nursery industry is the largest segment of ag in the state of Oregon, about 20,000 employees and nearly $800 million annual farm gate revenues. 80% of that, nearly 80%, is exported out of the state of Oregon. So it is a major traded sector portion of Oregon's economy. And theft is indeed a problem. The Oregon Association of Nurseries Theft Task Force report that you have before you, it details a number of thefts and a small sampling of those. And then it provides recommendations to grower members for fencing, lighting, motion detectors, cameras, other steps that growers can take. In one case, a grower put a fence around his shipping yard and planted a spiky thorn brush to grow on the fence to try to deter people from climbing over the fence. And that's also detailed in your report that is before. For you. It also provides guidelines and suggestions for working with local law enforcement officers. And most theft is pickup size, pickup load size lots of nursery goods. And I very much respect the intent of House Bill 2513, but there are a number of problems. First of all, is definition of shipment. How much constitutes a shipment of nursery goods? What about stuff I own? I happen to have at the house a nice Japanese maple that's still in the pot, and I do not have a receipt. If I was to move that from our place here in Salem back, say, to Elgin, where the winter would probably kill it, unfortunately, but would I have to have a shipping permit number to move that item from here to there or to any other location nearby? So I know a bill of lading suggestion has been thrown out. That would be definitely be a more wholesale oriented document, and I don't know, however, what we could do to if an officer was to stop somebody and they were to say, well, I bought this stuff retail, I don't have a bill of lading, how would we be able to prove otherwise? I think it is a real problem, and it does need to be addressed, and both at the from the grower's perspective and position and activities they take on their own operation, and if possible from the state level through regulations, laws, and emphasis on this problem. And I would just suggest that if the committee is so disposed, that we put together a work group to talk about this a little bit and see what can be done to potentially iron out some of the difficulties. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
I guess my only comment would be on the bill of lading, and I think this is part you could talk in a work group setting, is we do that in the cattle industry. And you just get a book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my fear is anybody can just get a book and write down, you know, I'm moving 5 cows today, and describe them, and that's all that's required when the police officer stops you. So I don't see that as being, I think it would have to be ironclad on how, who did that bill of lading or how you achieved them.
So. Madam Chair, cattle are typically branded, every one of them. And I've owned cows and shipped cows and been stopped by a state police who asked to see my slip and actually pulled up on the side of the truck, and I showed him where the brand was. And it was as described, and I don't know that he called back to the brand inspector to see if the brand was registered to me or not, but he did do his due diligence to check, and I appreciated the fact that he did. And our products in the nursery industry, however, are not branded.
Right.
And
neither are Western Oregon cattle.
Well, we don't need that on the record, perhaps. Rustlers might be listening today.
Well, I'm just saying.
I didn't know there was a difference.
Well, it's not required.
I wonder if they taste the same.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're way off the subject, but I... Representative Burley, did you have a question?
Actually, no. I was going to touch on the bill of lading, too, but you covered that. So I think a work group's a good idea, because I think there were some good issues raised. The more I look at these penalties, there's a lot of inconsistency in the existing code between nursery and the Christmas trees, and kind of an interesting issue.
Any other questions of Mr. Simmons?
Well, and Representative Burley? And I don't know if this is one, but... I mean, I certainly understand the value of nursery stock after having just landscaped a backyard. Oh. But
that was terrific. Thank you, Sister.
We appreciate that.
Have the police agencies acknowledged the value and the problem? I mean, really, are they? I mean, how often do they stop a truck going down the road with nursery stock in it? Do they? I guess if the police are not following up on these and enforcing, you know, the issue, I don't know what we can do to make them, I guess.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Beyer, the police, as we're all aware, are very, very busy. And in order to, I'm sure that they prioritize how they spend their time and try to spend it on things that they believe will be fruitful in catching people that are breaking the law. And it is against the law to steal nursery goods, as it is anything else that doesn't belong to you. It's against the law. However, without a way of proving or tracking where that came from, which is part of the idea behind this proposal, their time can't be spent very productively. And so I'm not aware of any instances where police officers have pulled over vehicles to check and see if they lawfully had in their possession nursery goods.
Thank you. Mr. Ashman, do you want to come back first? Mr. Park.
Madam Chair, thank you. Scott Ashman for the record.
Ron Park.
Great. I wanted to reiterate on what Representative Beyer brought up about the police. You know, lots of times they don't stop somebody. They obviously can't prove. That's what the nemesis of this bill is, why we're doing this bill. So do you have any suggestions after hearing the testimony, or maybe because you suggested a work group and otherwise? Yeah. I would really like to do something on this.
We thank you so much for your concern and your understanding and appreciation of this, and for wanting to help.
Okay.
I think that if we had the chair appoint a work group with say a member of the committee or two, and perhaps a representative from ODA, Mark Simmons, and perhaps Rod and or myself, that we probably could examine a kind of bill of lading which might work. As you've heard, there are some inconsistencies in the statute having to do with the Christmas tree permit requirement, the nursery permit requirement being at the discretion of the individual nursery. But I think that the concerns that have been raised here today, there aren't that many of them. And if we sat down, put our minds together, I think we could come up with something that would help. I really do. I do think that the solution does lie in the direction of a kind of a bill of lading that try to get it as foolproof as we possibly can. I do think that the solution is going to require some means of identification of the plant material accompany the truck. In other words, a shipping permit number or something like that is going to be necessary, and it's going to be necessary that it be a mandatory for everyone. The example of that Mark raised of shipping nursery stock from say Portland back to Elgin. If a person is a licensed nursery, yes, they should. The shipping permit number should accompany that shipment. Yes, that's the answer to that question. I believe it should be mandatory. The question that the department raised, Dan raised about what crime is it? Are we addressing nursery theft as a theft? Crime, or are we addressing it as a nursery license violation? That can be easily addressed right in the legislation itself. It's already against the law to steal nursery stock. The question about how do you get the sheriff to enforce it? Well, those of you who are from rural areas know that the sheriff is a busy man. But my experience in working with sheriffs, predominantly in Coos County and also in Union County, is that the sheriff is looking for tools to catch the crooks. Every tool you can give that sheriff is going to help him apprehend the thief. It's going to be at the discretion of the sheriff how he uses the tool or whether he uses the tool. But, you can't make the sheriff, you can't make him do something, but what you can do is give him the tools to do it. I really think that an agreement It's not that difficult to reach here, and if we had a work group with those members, I think they could do it.
Okay. I would like to appoint a work group.
Okay, Madam Chair, my comment would be is, for example, my bill of ladings, and I think most nurserymen nowadays, on our computerized systems, your license number is printed out on every bill of lading. It's just automatic.
Right.
No one handwrites them in any longer. The other is, it's just the idea, as mentioned, is to put a tool fact that when we're not trying to turn our nursery inspectors into plant police. I mean, we haven't bid on that. I mean, then you'd have to give them guns or something, and it'd be terrible. But the point, though, is that, on, for example, transshipments between the life nursery, I think it'd be very easy just to have the card in the vehicle, like, say, a J. Frank Schmidt, who transports a lot of material, put just something with the nursery license on there. But I think it's pretty certain who those people are. I mean, they've got big placards on the truck, and people know that they're it's J. Frank Nursery that's going down the highway. We're talking about the one we saw just peeled out of your driveway, and you managed to get a license number, and you followed them, you're on your cell phone. That's what we're talking about, because even if you get to that particular point, and even if you do pull them over currently, you can't prove anything. And so why would anybody go after it? So, yes, you're seeing a lot on the deterrent side, fencing, taking extreme measures, and, unfortunately, even a little bit of, shall we say, people guarding at midnight with certain type of things that would perhaps cause a little pain, but because of the repeat that's going on. So I think it's not the solution. But we've got to do something that for a deterrence. And this is just one of the tools. That's all we're asking.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to appoint a work group to kind of work on this issue, and I'll appoint myself until I talk to the rest of the committee, unless I have some volunteers that would like to be on that. I know we're all so busy right now, but I would like the Department of Ag and the North Tree Association and you gentlemen to be there. And maybe we can put something together that will work on this bill, because it's certainly an
issue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That'll close the public hearing on Bill 2513. Yes? Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think Representative Sumner wanted to be on that. Since he's not here, how about Representative Boquist?
Oh, there you go. We got a couple.
Yeah, we have a couple people. We have all kinds of people. What's my bill? So. Let's see, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2529. Patrick, you want to bring us up to speed on what that was?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2529, we heard for the first time on April 13th. The measure specifies that public lands that are used for wildlife management purposes are to be made accessible for hunting. It directs the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to avoid making management decisions that result in a net loss of wildlife management lands which are open and available for hunting, and directs the commission to report annually to the legislature on the acreage of public lands that are accessible. Since our meeting, we have received Dash 1 amendments, I believe, from Rod Harder, who will be available to speak to those amendments. We have had legislative fiscal and legislative revenue office peruse those amendments, and they indicate that it has no revenue impact, any minimal fiscal impact to implement those amendments.
Thank you very much. Rod Harder, do you want to come up and tell us 2529, and you have some amendments?
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, National Rifle Association representative for Oregon. The amendments are very simple. They're just a couple word amendments, and what they do is make it clear that the only report that Fish and Wildlife has to make is on those items which they take action. In other words, if the feds close down some land, that doesn't have to be included in the report. And that was done at the request of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay. Thank you. Do I have a motion?
Sure, I will move that the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2529 be approved.
Thank you. I have a motion to move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2529. Do I have any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boquist?
Absent. Or excused. Sorry.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Robles?
Yes.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative Byers?
Yes.
And Chair Smith?
Chair votes yes. Having received the required amount of votes, we move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2529. Representative Robles?
Sure. I move that we House Bill 2929 to the floor. 25-29-1 to the floor with a group pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. I have a motion to move House Bill 2529 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have any discussion? Representative Hass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I do appreciate what the hunters are trying to do and the need that they perceive. And to me, this is my problem with this approach is that we are micromanaging an agency and the professionals who work there. And I would feel the same way if it was bird watchers or skiers or anyone else. I mean, we're asking professionals to avoid making management determinations that result in a net loss of access to public lands used for wildlife management. I mean, how can we ask someone to manage wildlife and then say, but avoid making these kinds of decisions? It just doesn't make any sense to me. I appreciate the issue. Oregon is getting more crowded. It's more crowded than ski slopes and the beaches and other places. But I just don't think the legislature is the proper place to come in and try to micromanage one small area when we've got professionals that have to look at the big picture.
Thank you, Representative Pass. Any other comments? Representative Byer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in the public hearing, I did express concerns about this tying the department's hand somewhere in the future. I don't see it as a problem in the immediate future, but in the out there ways. I have definitely been assured by the department that they don't necessarily see it as doing that, but I just want to put on the record that is a concern that I have. I hope I'm wrong. I am going to support the bill today, but I just want to make sure that I have that on the record.
Thank you. Any other comments? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Pass?
No.
Representative Roblin?
Yes.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative
Byer?
Yes.
And Representative
Lopez? Excused.
And Chair Smith?
Chair votes yes. We have moved House Bill 2529 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Burley will be the carrier. And with that, I'll close
Thank
the
you.
Work session on House Bill 2529. Hope I can read it. Okay, we have work session on House Bill 3316. Patrick, do you want to bring us up to speed on that?
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 3316, which was first heard on April 6th, creates the Noxious Weed Control Fund, continuously appropriates monies from the fund to the State Department of Agriculture, establishes permissible expenditures from the fund, and establishes a tax credit for gifts, grants, or donations to the fund. This measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means because it's creating a fund within general fund. We have dash two amendments before us that were provided by Representative Krupp's office, and he would be here to speak to any questions the committee might have on those amendments.
Thank you, Representative Krupp. Join us.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. I took the committee's advice, drafted the dash two amendments to basically clean up the legislation to allow we're removing the language that says that the department cannot expend monies unless it reaches a balance, the fund reaches a balance of $2.5 million. The intent of the fund is to grant individuals or other entities who have tax liability with the state of Oregon an incentive to help us with the invasive or noxious weed issue here in the state. My feeling was, and I think it was certainly the feeling of the committee, would make sense for us if anyone donated money to that fund, that we ought to be able to put it on the ground and put it to work as quickly as possible. And that's why we've made that particular amendment. We've also deleted the $500 cap or limitation, keeping in mind that in a tax credit circumstance, your tax credits in any year cannot exceed your tax liability. So if you owed the state of Oregon $1,000 and you gave $2,000 to this fund, only $1,000 would count that particular year. However, you can roll forward, as is the standard practice. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think, again, this is a good direction for us to go. It incentivizes individuals who care about this issue, and there are growing numbers of them, both private foundations and individuals who are realizing seriousness of noxious weeds and invasive weeds, and this is some incentive to try to find a way to think outside the box to give us a little money to start dealing with this. We don't know the federal status yet of the money that's been appropriated, or rather signed into law, but not yet actually appropriated. We don't know if that's going to happen, to be quite honest with you. So, again, I would urge you to accept the -2 amendments and move House Bill 3316 to Ways and Means, where we can have this discussion there.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Krupp? Representative Hass.
Yes, do we have a revenue impact?
I don't believe so.
Madam Chair, Representative Hass, Legislative Revenue Office has issued a potential revenue impact statement for this. We have not at this time received a statement from them. If it does have a revenue impact, we will receive one prior to the bill being dropped. But,
what do you mean, the bill being dropped?
Well, because the bill is going to Ways and Means, we would, once the bill has been moved, we would receive an impact before that, after the committee has taken action. But we have not received information from LRO yet. There have been bills, because we received a potential revenue impact statement, it's possible that there could be revenue impact. However, we've received those on other bills where there has been no revenue impact. It's just on their first brush through, they said there may be, but LRO has not issued a statement on the bill yet.
Ooh, if I may,
yes.
This feels kind of rich. I'm not commenting on whether it's a good idea, but I'm certain there will be a significant revenue impact. And regardless of what it is, it feels like it should go to the Revenue Committee, which is in the job, you know, in the, deals with tax breaks. And I'm curious as to why it would go to Ways and Means instead of Revenue. And
Madam Chair and Representative Hass, I don't have a clue why it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means as opposed to Revenue. That's a good question.
I mean, I think it's a great incentive, don't get me wrong, but yeah. It seems like we're doing this a little backwards.
Is that something you would be amenable to if we sent a letter requesting it be sent to Revenue rather than Ways and Means?
Yes, Madam Chair. Either way, the issue of any potential revenue impact is going to be heard, and it's necessary in this process for that to occur, whether it's in Ways and Means or Revenue. And I'm fine with either one. It doesn't make any difference to me. I think that we would judge this as an issue that, you know, we offer a substantial tax credit in the realm of $1.2, $1.3 million a year for the arts as a tax credit in Oregon. And the arts don't negatively impact our ranch lands and our forest lands and our private urban farms. Noxious weeds do. And if you're someone who lives in an area like I do, and like many of you do, where noxious weeds are becoming a worse problem for your constituents to deal with, it seems to me that it is as least a valuable idea as the arts, which is a great idea, and I support that, but I just think that this is a fair argument also.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
No, I was just going to, for the purpose of moving things along, move that we adopt the -2 amendments to House Bill 3316.
Thank you, Representative Brewer. You have a motion to move -2 amendments to House Bill 3316. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hass?
Yes.
Representative Roland?
Yes.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative Geyer?
Yes.
Representative Bocas?
Excused.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Chair Smith?
Votes yes. We'll move the -2 amendments to House Bill 3316. And Representative Burley, do you want to make a motion? Because we can move this to Ways and Means with the note. Yes?
Madam Chair, a motion to move the bill to Ways and Means would be, I think, appropriate. I just wanted to clarify that if the committee was going to consider a motion to revenue, but I have nothing to say.
Madam Chair?
Representative Burley was... Were you going to make a motion?
Well, actually, I was going to try and figure out whether or not we need to make it to revenue or how we handle that question.
We have to send a letter to the speaker, right?
Yep.
To change the referral. And if it can be answered in both, either place, I see no reason to not move that bill today to Ways and Means with the note on it that it has implications for revenue. And I'm certain that they will address that issue down there.
Okay, well, in that case, then, Madam Chair, I will move...
Just one question before I do that. Is
no.
it possible?
Move House Bill 3316 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Burley. I have a motion to move House Bill 3316 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And I need to recognize Representative Hass first.
I he made my motion.
Okay, thank you.
That's a good motion.
And Representative,
that
you have a question?
No, he didn't put in the things. He made the motion exactly like I did.
Okay.
What it made.
Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative Byer?
Yes.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Hass?
Yes.
Chair votes yes. We've moved House Bill 3316 as amended. Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3316.
Good job.
Well, we just don't have time.
I absolutely agree.
Otherwise, we bring it back. And, yeah.
Yep.
So, with that, we are adjourned. I don't see any more business before the committee today. We are adjourned. And committee, it doesn't.